So let's begin. So I call your attention to source number one, and we're going to talk about the menorah, we're going to talk about Hanukkah. The menorah is one of the most ubiquitous symbols in Jewish life. It traverses so many different denominations, so many different contexts. The menorah is the symbol, as I'm sure Dr. Fine will discuss at great length, is a symbol that is found throughout Jewish history to represent Jewish identity, to represent the notion of projecting Jewish identity, Jewish pride, a sense of it is, and the whole story of Hanukkah. You know, even if those of us who read the news this morning, without getting too political, with all of the challenges that we had at the UN over the weekend, saw that all of the leaders, all of the Israeli leaders and various congressmen that were speaking, kept evoking the image of Hanukkah, the image of the menorah, the image of the Jewish people vanquishing their enemies, going into the Beis HaMikdash and being able to reclaim their sense of identity, their sense of culture. In fact, virtually every Jewish population survey ever done of North America confirms the notion that the most observed Jewish ritual throughout the unaffiliated Jewish community, such a community exists, is the lighting of the menorah. It is not a Pesach Seder, it is not Yom Kippur. Lighting the menorah, whether it's because of its convergence with other holidays that are taking place, it's therefore Jews kind of pivot to their own approach. I remember when I used to run NCSY, we had a lot of kids who kind of kept both because they came from mixed marriages. So we ran programs that tried to deal with, you know, different imagery to try to get the Jewish imagery out into the world. So it's a very pervasive type of presence, Hanukkah. It's not just a holiday of warmth and of illumination and a sense of connection that we have, but it's something that's really very universal in terms of its appeal and in terms of its resonance. And in fact, I'll tell you a quick story before we begin. It actually relates to the Kedushas Hayom of today. And that is the following. I was once running a camp. I grew up in Los Angeles. So I was running a camp for teens in a area of California called Big Bear. I don't know if any of you have been to California. It's just like New York, only nicer. And it's okay. It's December. You won't. I've never shoveled. So we were running a camp in Big Bear, and we arrived at the camp, and the camp was being managed by something called the YMCA, which I'm sure you know stands for the Young Men's Chavrusa Association. So at the YMCA, we pull up to the camp, and at the front of the camp is a giant, huge cross. So I walk over to the person who's in charge of the camp. His name is Reverend Mike. And I say to him, Reverend Mike, you know, I'm tremendously respectful of your religion, of everything that goes on here, everything is wonderful. But you have to understand that 300 Orthodox Jewish families are going to pull up to this campsite on visiting day, and they're going to be greeted with a giant sign that says, Welcome to Camp West, with a massive cross standing right next to the sign. Now, the cross had some Jewish motifs in terms of who was there, but in terms of its iconic symbolism, it was not at all consistent with the message we were trying to project. So Reverend Mike, this came all from him, Reverend Mike said, don't worry, I will take care of it. He goes walking off, comes back about 20 minutes later, and we're all standing around, and he's carrying, him and his assistant, and they are carrying hammers, nails, and wood. So I said to him, listen, you don't have to get all medieval on me. You know, I didn't mean anything. I just, you know, maybe we could cover the cross. So he says to me, you can't cover a cross. It's a priestess that covered to the cross. It's a tulsus in your bummus. You're not allowed to cover a cross. So I said to him, all right, so like, what's the plan? He said, Rabbi, I have it all figured out. So I said, what are you going to do? And he said, you see the cross? I said, yeah. He says, we're going to put a board here, 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 and here. Menorah. And that's what they did. They made this menorah, and when everyone drove up to the camp, in the front there was this huge sign that said, Welcome to Camp West, with the giant menorah, with the very accentuated bass and shamus in the middle of the menorah. And everybody's walking around with a beautiful, but it looked like a camp menorah, you know what I mean? Not camp, everything's kind of just put together and this. So even the notion that this reverend would come up with this image as a solution to this problem brings us to the world and understanding. Chanukah is a very, very pervasive idea. And sometimes the symbolism gets all mixed up together. I was in Israel a couple of weeks ago, and in Mea Shearim, they're totally, you know, Chanukah rocking. And there was a store, and they had a big basket of toys. And I looked inside the basket of toys, and one of them is a toy Santa Claus. So I take the Santa Claus, and I walk up to the guy running the store, and I say to him in all my eloquent Hebrew, Mazeh. So the guy says to me, Zeh Chanukah Rav. So I said to him, Zeh lo Chanukah Rav. Zeh, hoi, hoi, hoi. Zeh lo Chanukah Rav, right? But I bought it because I wanted, and I have it. When people come over, they're like, why do you have Santa Claus? I'm like, Zeh Chanukah Rav. This is, God forbid you drive through there. You know, there will stone you. But, you know, Christological, that works to go. So the Torah tells us that there's a mitzvah to build a menorah. The menorah is one of the most prominent and central, one of the kelim of the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash. And it is included in Parshas Truma, in Parshas Tetzaveh, in Sefer Shemos, along with all of the other kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. However, the menorah begins to break through in terms of its significance and centrality to the Mikdash experience already in Parshas Vahaloscha. And this will be part of the Kriyas HaTorah that we will read over the course of Chanukah. So join me in source number one. Source number one, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar, and Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, Daber el Aaron, the Amarto I love, speak to Aaron and you should tell him, Bahaloska es Haneros, when you light the Neros, el Mum Pinei Hanenorah Ya'iru Shivas Haneros. And Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Aaron HaKohen, and he says to him, this is your mandate, this is your role in the Mishkan, definitional to your role in terms of serving in the Mikdash is the lighting of the menorah. Asks Rashi in source number two. Lama nismecha parshas haminorah with parshas hanesim. Also in the Kriyas HaTorah for Chanukah, we will read through all of the karbonos of the nesim. Each one of the nesim brought an identical configuration of karbonos to project the sense of unity of purpose but diversity of personality in terms of what the Shvatim really capture as the foundation of the Jewish people. Each one of the Nesiim brings a certain configuration of karbanos, and the Torah wants to know, Rashi wants to know, Lama nismecha parshas haminorah leparshas haNesiim. Why do we juxtapose the commandment to Aaron to light the menorah with the karbanos of the Nesiim, which are depicted at the conclusion of Parshas Naso, which is what leads us to the world of Parshas Vahaloscha? Answers Rashi, L'fi k'shiro Aharon, when Aharon saw Chanukas haNesiim, that the Nesiim, that the leaders of each tribe, had a role, a prominent role, in the inauguration of the Mishkan, Chol Sha'az Dato, he became very despondent, he became very depressed. That Aaron did not have a role in this Chanukah's Mishkan. Aaron, when you read through all of the Nesiim, you will see that it omits the family of Aaron, the family of the Kohanim. He did not have a role in this inauguration. So you can imagine. Lo hu v'lo shifta. Now he did not his shape. So you can imagine. I don't know if any of you have ever dedicated a building. I'm sure we built a building about a year ago. We had a big dedication. You bring all the prominent people. You bring the politicians, and you bring the Rosh Yeshiva, and you bring the rabbis, and you bring the donors. You imagine having this old program, and the one person you omit is the rabbi. He gets to serve the zini, right? This isn't to say, right? He gets to serve, other places maybe sushi, right? He gets to serve the zini, but he doesn't have a role. That's how Aaron felt. Here they're inaugurating the Mishkan. The Mishkan is under Aaron's auspices. He is the one who's going to guide the Jewish people through the service of the Avodas Beis HaMikdash, and yet he's omitted from its foundational dedication with all the other Nesiim. So Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so God says to Aaron, Chayecha, by your life, Shelcha Gedola Mishelahem. Indeed, you're right, you were omitted from the rest of the Nesiim. But your role is actually going to transcend this. Your role is going to be Gidolo Mishalahem, greater than theirs. She'ata Madlik Umeitiv Esaneus. Because you are going to ignite and you are going to maintain the Neros of the Menorah. Here we encounter the menorah as enjoying a special and unique significance relative to Aharon, that somehow this should compensate from Aharon's omission from the rest of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash with everybody else. She'ata Madrik who made to the Saneros. They may have gotten the opportunity to go ahead and dedicate the Mikdash, but you are going to be entrusted with the daily responsibility of illuminating the Mishkan, of projecting the ideals of the Mikdash to the outside world, all of the symbolism of the menorah. That's going to be your domain. The Ramban is very bothered by this interpretation. The Ramban says, "Lo nizbarer li lama nachamu v'hadlokas haneros." Ramban says, "I don't understand why Aaron HaKohen was comforted with this specific task. V'lo nachamu v'kitores boker v'erev sheshaku bo hakosuv yasimu kitores v'apecha u'bechol hakorbonos u'v'menachos chavison." Says the Ramban, "I don't understand. Aaron HaKohen is going to be involved in daily dimensions of the avodah of the Beis HaMikdash constantly. He will have an enduring responsibility over all of the korbanos. This is the chief executive, chief spiritual officer of the Beis HaMikdash. And why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu select one particular avodah, the avodah of the menorah, to identify Aaron HaKohen's significance relative to everybody else? There's lots of things that Aaron HaKohen that will do that's unique. Some of them are even more powerful than lighting the menorah." The Ramban goes on to give examples. Aaron HaKohen is going to be the only human being that is permitted to walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom HaKippur. Aaron HaKohen is licensed to enter into the inner sanctum of the Beis HaMikdash. He's able to see all sorts of angelic representations of God. He's able to represent the entire Jewish people. There are moments of Aaron HaKohen's service that far outshine the daily requirements, the daily responsibility of lighting the menorah. Why is it that the Medrash seems to capture the menorah as the compensating avodah for Aaron HaKohen? So the Ramban goes on to say, two lines before the end of the first paragraph, about Inyan HaKodah Hazu, the real interpretation of this Medrash, Rebez min ha-parsha al-chanuka shel neros shehoya bebayis sheni al yedei Aaron uvonov ritzoni lomar chashmonoi kohen gadol uvon. That in fact, this entire offering to Aaron HaKohen of the menorah as something that's unique to him and his family had nothing to do with the daily responsibility of the Beis HaMikdash, but rather was thematically much more connected to the whole notion of inauguration, of dedication, because there would be another moment of dedication, and that moment of dedication would not be accounted for by the representation of all of the other shvatim. It would not be achieved through the bravery and courage of the leaders of all of the other shvatim, but rather the descendants of Aharon, the Bnei Hashmonai, they would be the ones to walk into the Beis HaMikdash, the Tinu Es Hashman, they would be the ones to be able to be Metaher, all of the things that were Tamei, and through them the miracle of Hanukkah would emerge, and through that experience that would ripple throughout Jewish history, and ultimately represent the notion of Jewish identity in a very, very significant way, all throughout Jewish culture, all throughout the Jewish world. So the promise to Aaron was not immediate, was not the hadlokas ha-menorah that he was experiencing right now, but rather, says the Ramban, the promise to Aaron was prophetic. There would be one day, a bahaloscha es haneros, that will transcend the role that all of the Nisiyim have played. So this is the discussion between Rashi and the Ramban. But coming back to Rashi for a moment, Rashi makes very clear that it is the ongoing responsibility of Aaron HaKohen to maintain the lighting of the menorah. Whether it's like Ramban says, the significance of the Hashmonaim, whether it's day to day, the relationship between Aaron and the menorah is unique. Bahalos chodaber el Aaron, the Amarta Elov, speak to Aaron and say to him, very, very specific, Bahalos cha es haneros, when you light those neros, says Rashi, Sha'ata madliku meitiv es haneros. Now let's explore a Rambam. The Rambam tells us in Hilchos Bias HaMikdash, Perek Tes, He's discussing the halachos of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam tells us the following amazing halacha. It's shocking, it's striking, and it's totally counterintuitive. The Rambam writes, V'chein hadlokas hanelus. Same thing with the lighting of the candles. He's following up on another halakha. K'sheira bizari. Lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash is permitted to be done through a zohar. A zohar is someone who's not a kohen. You do not require a kohen to light the menorah. Now the Rambam's implicit question is, there's a logistical challenge. The menorah sits, you know, in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, not at the top of the kotel steps, right, where the guy plays that very old keyboard and gives out red string, and, you know, if you wear a tie walking down there, it costs you $50, you're done, right? That's not where the menorah really sits. The menorah sits in the Heikal. And a czar in Israel is not allowed to go into the Heikal. So it's an impossibility. So what do you mean you don't have to be a kohen to light the menorah? To reach the menorah, you have to be a kohen. So it's impractical. Says the Rambam, not so. If the kohen prepares the neros in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Heikal, the holtzion lichutz, and he brings that menorah outside the Beis HaMikdash, right there, the Eish HaTorah building, right there, and you are standing there, your group is standing there, you know, you're raising money for JNF, whatever, you want to honor someone, you want to give them a really chush of a thing. So, mutter lezor lahadlikon, that's what we do. We bring the menorah out, we honor Mr. Goldberg with lighting the menorah, like a bar mitzvah from 1972, right? We honor Mr. Goldberg with lighting the menorah, and then the Kohen takes the menorah back into the Heichal, back into the Beis HaMikdash, and that's enough. That's what the Rambam says. And this is a very difficult Rambam. It's a very difficult Rambam, first of all, based on what we just said, because the Tzukim and the Halacha seem to indicate there's an exclusivity in the relationship between the menorah and Aaron HaKohen, and here we see that from a halachic standpoint, that exclusivity does not find expression in the general expectations of the mechanics of lighting the menorah. And it's a very difficult Rambam from another perspective as well, and here we're going to learn together an important halacha in Hilchos Chanukah. The Gemara says in Shabbos, the Gemara has a question in Masechta Shabbos, and that question is, hadlaka osa mitzvah or hanaka osa mitzvah? What does that mean? Hadlaka osa mitzvah literally means the lighting accomplishes the mitzvah, which means the moment I light the menorah, last night we all stood in front of our menorahs, the moment I kindle that candle, the moment I light the menorah, I've accomplished the mitzvah of Chanukah. Everything afterwards is beautiful, is wonderful, is illuminating, is incredible, it's hashkafic, it's beautiful, but the actual mitzvah act occurs in the moment I light the menorah. And therefore, the menorah needs to be positioned in a place that is kosher for lighting. Where is the place that's kosher for lighting? In your window, outside your doorway, a place that's very public, right? It needs to be positioned because the moment you light it, that's when you do the mitzvah. The Gemara says maybe that's the mechanics of Hilchos Chanukah, or maybe Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah. Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah means it's not the lighting, it's the placing of the menorah. We don't actually care about the moment of lighting itself. So you can light the menorah, let's say you want to light the menorah in your kitchen, and no one can see and no one's around, and you feel like it's safer. You light the menorah, and then you want to carry the menorah to the place where it is ideally situated for Parsumei Nisa, for publicizing the miracle. That would be permissible under the rubric of Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah. And this is a debate in the Gemara. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, in source number 6, Hadlokah Osa Mitzvah. That in fact, that indeed, it is the Hadlokah, it is the lighting of the menorah, that accomplishes the mitzvah. Okay, so asks the Minchas Chinuch in source number 7. If indeed it is the Hadlokah that is Osa Mitzvah, then we have a very big problem with the Rambam we just read, right? Why? So let's follow together in the Minchas Chinuch. The Zeh Hamashonim, it's already a number of years, Hakishisi al-Din Zeh Shal Rambam, that I was troubled by this law of the Rambam, That if you carry the menorah outside to the plaza, not to the hotel, to the area outside, right? Although it would apply there too, although it's better with Sheridan, right? So when you carry it outside and you light it there, so ha menorah, so he's bothered by this halacha. Ask the Minchas Chinuch, according to the Rambam solution of our logistical challenge. Right? What was the challenge? The challenge was anybody can light the menorah. What do you mean anybody can light the menorah? How is the Zohar supposed to get to the menorah? It's in a place that's not accessible to somebody who's not a Kohen. Oh, very simple, says the Rambam. Carry the menorah outside of the Beis HaMikdash, have someone light it there, and bring it back in. Ask the Minchas Chinuch. That is the quintessential depiction of Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah. You are lighting the menorah in a place that is not fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah to light the menorah in the mikdash, and then you're moving the menorah to a place where it is accessible. That is an expression of Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah. And we paskin Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah. Why in the world would we, you could ask it both ways. Why would the mikdash compromise on the integrity of the lighting by allowing that lighting to take place in an area outside the mikdash? Or, even if you want to say that that's the paradigm, that Hanukkah is a mitzvah, why would we legislate the laws of Hanukkah that are supposed to be reenacting, reimagining, re-experiencing the lighting of the menorah in the mikdash? Why would we do such a thing not patterned after the original paradigm of the mikdash and paskin hadlaka osim mitzvah? That is the question of the Minchas Chinuch. He asks another question in that second he bolsters that question with another problem. This is going to be fascinating as well. He says the following. You know that there's a special drush in the Torah that tells us that it's permissible to light the menorah on Shabbos. We would light the menorah, not the Hanukkah menorah, not like that on Shabbos. The menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was lit on Shabbos. So that's very striking, that's very shocking. You're lighting the menorah on Shabbos, but you can't do that. Special drush in the Torah, you're allowed to light the menorah on Shabbos. Minchas Chinuch says, I don't understand. If the Rambam is correct, follow me, if the Rambam is correct, then it is unnecessary for such a dramatic violation. Because I have a very simple solution, said the Minchas Chinuch. Shabbos, we're getting towards Shabbos, right? We're into the 18 minutes. The men are just starting to get home, right? And we take the menorah outside the mikdash. We light the menorah before Shabbos, so we don't have to violate Shabbos. We say Nigid Nefesh, we say Kabbalah Shabbos, even though that wasn't introduced 100 years later, whatever, right? Harbach Minyan, right? Obviously, we did that in the Beis HaMikdash, right? All these things, we do all those things, and then what do? We simply move the menorah back into the mikdash, and we have circumvented the need to violate Shabbos in lighting the menorah. Says the Minchas Chinuch, if the Rambam is correct, that Hanukkah osa mitzvah, we don't need this dramatic dispensation permitting us to light the menorah in the mikdash on Shabbos. So the Minchas Chinuch is very troubled by this Rambam. And his final shot at the Rambam, and by the way, the Ravid agrees with the Rambam in principle. He just doesn't think the Zohar should do it l'chachim. Thinks the Zohar should only do it for the Yed. But in that final paragraph, the Minchas Chinuch writes that it's also difficult to understand the second line of that paragraph. Tamu ali mitaras kohanim mefurish beparshas emor. It says, I am bothered by the Taras kohanim explicit in parshas emor. The pasuk yarok osam lifnei Hashem, that you should arrange them before Hashem. It seems that there's an explicit makar in Medrash Halacha that you should not light the menorah outside and bring it inside. This is the question of the Minchas Chinuch. And it gets worse. This question gets more powerful. Because look at the next source number 8. Source number 8 is the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma, so we need to understand, what does this mean? That lighting the menorah, either it's part of the Beis HaMikdash, it's not part of the Beis HaMikdash. What does this mean? You don't have to do it there. You can do it outside. You can bring it back in. What does this mean? So the Gemara in Yuma tells us the following. Look at the second word on the first line. Hadloka lav avodahi. A very dramatic statement. The lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash while it was an essential part of the sequence of events that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, and it had meaning and purpose from a aspect of sanctity and service, it was not a formal avodah. It is not designated as part of the formal service of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Bahatanya, the low, is that not? Bahatanya, we learned in a braisa. The Natsno Bnei Aaron HaKohen, Eish Ala Mizbeach, but Arko Eitzim Ala Eish. That Aaron HaKohen, the sons of Aaron HaKohen, would put the fire on the Mizbeach and arrange the wood on the fire. So it sounds like lighting flames in the Mikdash was part of the Avodah of the Kohan. So says the Gemara, Limeid Al Hatsasa Alisa, Shelo Tehe Ela Bekohen Kosher Ubeklichet Sharetz. This teaches us that when they used to light up the wood that was on top of the Mizbeach, that required more than just a flame. That required using these kindling chips that would, and they would have to, anybody who's ever been to camp, right? Ever been to camp and you build a campfire or, you know, right? You can't just take a match and throw it into a pile of wood, right? That's not how it works. You have to build the teepee, you have to put the things underneath, the newspaper, the twigs, and this and that, right? And then the weak ones, you know, throw in the lighter fluid, right? But the, right? And the more, you know, mischievous ones, the cans of the other, whatever it is. I'm not saying that, but, you know, the, whatever it is, you have to, there's more to making the fire. So when it comes to lighting the fire on the Mizbeah with the wood, so that was part of the Avodah, because the Kohanim played such an active role in igniting that fire. They had to soak it, they had to light it, they had to force it, they had to work on it. When it and that's why it needs a kohen, and that's why it must be done in Bidei Kohen. However, Hatzasa Alisa Avodahi, Hadloka Lav Avodahi. But just lighting the menorah, that is not called a Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Why not, says the Tosfos Yishonim in source number 9? Shehashal Heves Ola Me'eleh. Because after all, lighting a candle, who really does the work? You take the flame, you bring it towards the candle, and then what jumps from one candle to the other? It's not your action. All you do is you create the context within which the flame can ignite on its own. So the Rishonim view it. So the Kohen takes the candle, he touches the wick. You're not doing anything to proactively light that. All you're doing is you're approximating the two wicks, and then the other wick catches me'eleh. Since the whole notion of lighting the menorah is essentially a process that is driven by the item itself, and the human contribution is simply shaping the environment, the context within which that can take place, therefore it is not designated, it is not characterized as an avodah, as something that is a form of avodah. And so therefore, it's not considered part of service, official service, in the Beis HaMikdash. So here we have. We have a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Aaron HaKohen, that yours is greater than theirs. That you're going to, you know, you're going to be Madlik who made to the Saneros. You're in charge of the menorah. You're in charge of the menorah. First of all, we see from the Rambam that anybody could light the menorah. Even the Tzar could light the menorah. Second of all, we see from the Rambam that you don't even have to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. You can take it out and light it there and bring it back in. Third of all, we see from the Gemara in Yuma that even when the Kohen does light the menorah, it's not really considered a central part of the Avodah. It's not really significant in terms of its halakhic identity. It's not considered really part of the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore, it's difficult to understand, number one, how it is that this became the paradigm for our Hilchos Chanukah, because it differs so much. We paskin that you do have to light the candles. We paskin that you have to light it in the right place. We paskin that it does matter who and how and when and where you're doing the lighting, whereas the origins of this experience seem to not care at all. And second of all, how is this unique to Aaron? How is this balos cha es aneros? This is not unique to you. This can be done by anybody, and even when it is done by you, it's not so significant that it's done by you. Because really, the flames are doing it on their own. This is the question of the Tosfos Yishonim, this is the question of other Rishonim. So join me in source number 11. The Ritva has in source number 10 another approach, but let's go to source number 11. And we're going to take two different approaches to this question. Number one is to understand what does the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, what is it really about? So the Rambam says the following in his Sefer HaMitzvos. Shenitzavu HaKohanim Lahad L'Kadero Somim L'Shnei Hashem, that the Kohanim are obligated to light the candles before Hashem. Vehu Amru Yisparav Yarok Oso Aron Uponam. And that's what it means when God says that Aaron and his sons should be Ya'aroch, which really means to arrange. And then the Rambam throws in a line, Vizoski mitzvahs hatovas aneiros. Says the Rambam, the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash is not actually to take a flame and light the menorah. The mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was what's called hatovah. Hatava means to prepare the menorah, right? What we have to do tonight, or what we used to have to do before everything in the menorah was disposable, right? Remember back in the old days, in the days of the Hasmoneans, where you got the little jars with the floating wicks, right? And you had to spill them out and clean them out, and you actually used them again for multiple nights of Hanukkah, maybe even for multiple Hanukkahs. Right? Whereas today, right, you buy the little triangle, you snap it off, you get your tetanus shot, and then you just set up the menorah and you move on to the next night, right? So the atava, which was a big part of the menorah, the avoda of the menorah, the Kohen would unscrew the top, they would take it down from the menorah, they would clean it out, they would fill it with oil, they would put it in a new wick, they would put it on top. That was the mitzvah of hadlokas aneiros. That's what the Rambam says. Other Rishonim said, no, that's not the mitzvah of Hadlokas Aneiros. The mitzvah of Hadlokas Aneiros is to light the menorah. That's what the Sefer HaKinuch says in source number 12. So Rav Chaim Brisker, source number 13, makes a very, very powerful argument. Rav Chaim Brisker writes, listen closely, he writes that the real mitzvah of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was just to ensure that it was actually lit. To make sure that there was a standing lit menorah. And the preparation for that lighting was what was core to the Kohanim. And in fact, if you look back at the Rambam says one of the things that the Kohen has to do in the Mikdash is be native menorahs, is prepare the candles. So believe it or not, says Reb Chaim, the real mitzvah of the menorahs of Hanukkah in the Beis HaMikdash was to simply prepare the menorah each and every day for the lighting. The lighting itself was something that happened entirely on its own. Yes, somebody, it didn't have to be a Kohen, it could have been anybody, somebody needed to bring the candle to the wick so that that can happen. But the real mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash each and every day was simply to secure the consequence, the outcome, that the menorah was lit. And therefore, we understand the Rambam. The Rambam says, anybody could do the actual lighting, but only the Kohen could prepare it, because that was the main message of the menorah, that was the main part of the menorah, and then we could bring it back in and have it stand in the Beis HaMikdash. So this leads us, this analysis leads us to two obvious questions. Question number one is, if that's true, then why do we model the holiday of Hanukkah not after the general expectations of the Beis HaMikdash? In the Beis HaMikdash, you didn't have to light the menorah in a kosher way. You just had to make sure it was lit. Why doesn't that become the paradigm for the laws of Hanukkah? Why do we have Adlaka Osa Mitzvah when in the Beis HaMikdash it was Anacha Osa Mitzvah? Why do we have a distinct type of approach to what the origins were? And here is where we encounter the Meshech Chochma. The Meshech Chochma writes that yes, it's true that the mitzvah to light the menorah is simply to facilitate its ignition, not to actually actively or proactively ignite that flame. But there was a one-time exception to that idea. There was a one-time exception. What was the one-time exception? The one-time exception was when they inaugurated the Mishkan with the very, very first time that they lit the menorah. The very first time they lit the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan, the very first time was not under the rubric of the Rambam's general rule that you could bring the menorah outside the mikdash, that someone else can light it, that it doesn't matter where it is, that cleaning it out is the only important and core part of the mitzvah. The first time you light the menorah, it is the proactive engagement with this mitzvah, with the lighting. It is the creation of the light itself that is fundamental to the experience. And therefore, the first time that Aaron HaKohen lights the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash for the Chanukas HaMishkan, it had to be Aaron. And the Mesher Chokmah says, now we understand Rashi. Now we understand why it had to be Aaron. If the compensating role of the menorah was not in the days of the Chashmonaim, it was right now. That Aaron, yes, it's true, that throughout the rest of Jewish history, in the normative practice of the Beis HaMikdash, we do not require a Kohen to light the menorah, it could be lit by anyone, but in order to inaugurate the Beis HaMikdash, in order to invest and infuse the Mikdash with its initial power and potency and ability to create a sense of sanctity within the Jewish people, that requires a proactive initiative, that requires a hadlaka, that requires a light. And perhaps that explains why it is that Hanukkah is not patterned after the general experience of the Mikdash. Because when the Chashmonaim walked into the Beis HaMikdash, what were they doing? Were they simply lighting the menorah like a general Tuesday or a general Wednesday? No. They were involved in dedicating the Beis HaMikdash. It was a Chanukah. They were involved in doing it for the first time after it had been defiled and after it had been abandoned. They were involved in doing it for the first time. So when Chazal looked to the two potential contexts from which to draw the halakhic structure of Chanukah, they didn't extract that structure from the general observance of the Beis HaMikdash. They extracted the pattern from the very first time of the Beis HaMikdash, in which the lighting does matter. And they immortalized that within the context of the Chag of Chanukah. So what we are doing when we light these candles, what we are doing when we light these menorahs, is not mimicking what used to happen in the Beis HaMikdash. Is not patterning ourselves after the day-to-day of what happened in the Beis HaMikdash. If we were, we wouldn't paskin hadlaka osa mitzvah. We wouldn't paskin that you need to light it with such a sense of initiative. But rather, we are recreating the moment of dedication. And why is that so significant? It's so significant because the capacity to rededicate something is sometimes even more challenging than the ability to dedicate it initially. Right? When you are able to build something from the ground up, there's a sense of excitement and enthusiasm, there's a sense of creativity, there's a sense of everybody's coming together, you know, in our shul. So we knocked down our old building, and then we built a brand new building. People are elated. People, you literally see something rise from the ground and it comes out of nowhere. You know, with a lot of debt, but it comes out of nowhere. Right? And literally, and there's a sense of enthusiasm. It says we're literally creating a building. But try to go to the same group of people and say, 20 years later, the plumbing's no good, the lighting's no good, the walls are no good. No, we need some money so that we can reinvigorate, that we can rededicate our Mikdash Me'ah. That's a much harder sell, as everybody knows. That's a much, much harder sell. And that's true in Yahadus in general, right? Whenever we encounter, I used to work in outreach. So when you deal with people who are discovering Judaism for the very first time, there's a certain sense of Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. They're on fire. They're so excited. They're so into it. They're elated. They can't take on enough. There's so much enthusiasm. But when we all eventually settle into the patterns and rhythms of halakhic observance, and then things start to erode and the inspiration starts to wane, and we look around for a sense of resurgence, a sense of rededication, a sense of re-inspiration, that's always much harder. That's always much more difficult. And we always saw that there was a fall off. There were some students who would literally go like this, and then you'd see them 2 years later, and it was completely gone. But then you saw that there were other students that when they took it one step at a time, which we used to push them, it was very hard, you know, to tell kids who wanted to keep Shabbos right now, all of it, that you don't have to keep Shabbos, all of it right now. Let's start with some of the, like, winnowing. No winnowing. This Shabbos, right? You're trying to give them a sense of motzit b'holei, a sense of step by step. Don't take everything on at once. And very often we found that when the kids approached it in that way, they were able to maintain their sense of commitment. Rededication is always much more challenging than dedication itself. And that is what they wanted to integrate into the Chag of Hanukkah. The ability of every Jewish home to take a step back in the middle of a winter, in the part of the year that has distance from the inspiration of Yom Ha'Orayim, Pesach is who knows how far away, and to take that area, I think I just sent the women to women and rabbis, by the way. You know, when we take that era of the Jewish calendar, that part of Jewish life, when we say that we're going to find inspiration and light and excitement, and we integrate it into the bias, into the home, into the family, Neri Shubeso, Nerucho Echad, the Echad, Mosif Aholech, the magic of Chanukah, is not the magic of the Beis HaMikdash's experience of day-to-day menorah. The magic of Hanukkah is the ability to walk into a Beis HaMikdash that's already standing and say we're going to reinvigorate it and re-energize it and send it to a new place. And that was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Aaron HaKohen. She'ata madrik u'meitav Beis HaNeros. Shalcha gedola mishelahem. You know what these Nesim can do? They can create excitement and enthusiasm out of nowhere. They're looking at a desert floor, and they're able to pull up a Mishkan, and everyone's like, wow, look at that amazing Nasi of Ruben, Nasi of Shimon, Nasi of Yehuda. Look what you did. We're so excited. Shall you definitely go? We'll give money. We'll support you. We're in. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. That's the world of the Nisim. But that only lasts so long. Over time, that dissipates. Over time, that energy begins to erode. Over time, that sense of enthusiasm and excitement begins to wane. Ata madlik, and here's the key word, umeitiv es haneiros. You, Aaron, you know what you're involved in? You are involved in the world of Hanukkah. Your role is dedication. Your role is bringing the experience of dedication into the rhythm of everyday life. And that ultimately is, Aaron, why we're entrusted. I want to share with you one other perspective on Aaron's unique contribution to this. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Aaron HaKohen, you know, you're going to be the one that's ultimately going to be in charge of the menorah. So even in the world of the Mikdash, so this works very well for the whole notion that this is about Hanukkah. Let's look at the world of the Mikdash for a moment and try to appreciate the godless of the Rambam himself. Okay? Even devoid of all these other interpretations. So look at source 16. Who is Aaron HaKohen? So we all know there's a famous statement about Aaron HaKohen. Hillel v'shamay kiblu mehem. Hillel omer ebeni talmidot shel Aaron. You should be like the talmidim of Aaron, the students of Aaron. Oev shalom, you should love peace. Derodev shalom, relentlessly pursue peace. Oev es abrios, you should love all creation. Mekarvim laTorah, and you should bring them close to Torah. Aaron HaKohen was a leader who led from within. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen, two brothers that led the Jewish people, with very, very different dispositions. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam tells us, one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim, one of the lesser known ones because it hasn't been a song. But the Rambam tells us, you just can't get into a kumzitz with this one, right? The Rambam tells us, Ani mamim memuna shalema, Shenevuas Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom Aisa Amitis, that the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is all true. The Shehu Av LeNeviim, he's the father of all Neviim. LaKodim Mepanav LaBoim Achol. No one that ever came before Moshe was greater, and no one that ever will come after Moshe is greater. Moshe Rabbeinu is a leader that leads from the top down. He's on this mountain. He doesn't eat. He doesn't drink. He's angelic. He comes down. We can't even look at his face. Moshe Rabbeinu separates from his wife and his family. That's the subject of the Lashon Hara that Miriam tells to her brother Aaron. How could he do such a thing? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Miriam in the parasha and tells her, you don't understand that Moshe's role of leadership is different than everyone else. This is a one-time exception in Jewish history where the people have to be prioritized over the family of the leader, because ultimately the people are his family. He is the nursing mother of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu is a unique, distinguished, one-of-a-kind leader of the Jewish people. Up on the mountain, and we're on the bottom, and we're trying to take this Mesorah, this tradition, from Moshe. Aaron HaKohen, a completely different personality. Aaron HaKohen is amongst the people. In fact, the Avos Rabbi Narsan, if you look at source number 18, says, She'Aaron HaKohen Olav HaShalom, what did he used to do? Margish Va'adam Shetocho Ra, when he would encounter someone who was a bad person, Ashim is Sabra Lav Shetocho Ra, someone told him that they were a bad person, there should be other Abeva. What did Aaron do? He didn't throw things at them. He didn't ban them. He didn't criticize them. He didn't write a blog about how horrible they are. What did Aaron do? Hayamaskil lo shalom. He used to say to them, Shalom Aleichem. You Abarian Apikars. Right? Shalom Aleichem. Oh, I need a friend. Shalom Aleichem. Vahayamis Ahib Elo. And they would develop a relationship with him. Hayamarbil is Saparimo. And they would talk with him. The Hoya Ha'ishahu Mizbayish Binasho Be'omar. And what would happen? This individual, when he would encounter a moment of temptation, they would say to themselves, how in the world can I sit? Aaron HaKohen, the greatest of the great, has a sense of appreciation and affirmation for who I am. He recognizes my potential. How in the world can I go and do something wrong? He just imagined if one of the Gedolim, one of the great sages of the Jewish people, came to your living room and said, I just want you to know, I want to have a relationship with you, I want to shmooze with you, I want to talk with you, I want to, you know, and what? And after they leave, we're going to go do something inappropriate? Of course not. Once you've had an encounter like that, would you feel like you have a personal interest in who you are? So Aaron HaKohen was about the Oed Shalom, the Rode Shalom. He was a man of the people. Now, Aaron HaKohen is standing at the threshold of the newly constructed Mishkan. And he knows that his role is to be the Kohen Gadol. What's the Kohen Gadol? Kohen Gadol, the person who's in charge of this edifice, of this Mikdash. And Aaron HaKohen is standing there, and all the people are coming, and he's saying to himself, hold on, I'm about to be pulled out of the community and put in this intense spiritual structure in order to manage everybody's karbanos and everything, all the service to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Aaron HaKohen felt that his entire role was about to change. And that he looked at the Nisim, and that's where the jealousy was. Chosha Azdato Shel Aaron. Aaron began to realize that he wasn't with them anymore. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to be the ones to dedicate the Mishkan, and he was going to have to live like Moshe, somewhere up in the stratosphere of spirituality, disconnected from everybody else. And his entire approach to dealing with people was in jeopardy in terms of it being his modality of how he reached out and how he ultimately inspired people. And that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and says, Aaron, you have it all wrong. Shelcha gidola mishelahem, she'ata madlik umeitiv es anilos. What does it mean that you're going to be madlik and meitiv anilos? It means, says the Rambam, that Aaron, yes, you are based in the Mikdash. You are anchored in the world of spirituality. But ultimately, your mandate is to take the menorah out of the Mikdash and empower others to light the menorah and then ultimately bring it back. Being the Kohen Gadol does not mean that you isolate yourself from the people. The menorah is the conduit that expresses the portal that exists between the outside world and the Mikdash itself. And you, Aaron, are the only one that can ultimately transverse that barrier and bring the world of the menorah to the people and empower and inspire them to ultimately light that menorah. That is what being a Kohen is. Rav Tzadok writes that we're all called Mamleches Kohen. Everybody's called a Kohen. So what do you mean that Aaron's a Kohen? Everybody's a Kohen. Says Rav Tzadok, you know what it means that we're a Mamlechus Kohanim? It means that everybody adds kahuna, and the job of a Kohen is to help every Jew discover the Kohen within themselves. Every Jew has the capacity, maybe not for the formal avoda of kahuna, but for the leadership of kahuna. The ability to make a difference, to make an impact, to lead, to affect things, to change things. That capacity exists within everyone. We're all a Mamlechus Kohanim to the whole world. And it's just that we need these Kohanim to show us what we're truly capable of doing. And I believe that that's the reason every time we stand for Birchas Kohanim, right? So we all know the Kohanim stand and they bless us. And what are we supposed to do? We're not supposed to look, right? We're not supposed to look. Okay, and we're told if we look, we'll go blind, right? Okay, so we won't look. But, right, so what happens, right? Why can't you look? These are figures of spirituality. Why won't you look? It's very inspiring. It's very inspiring to see them. Man, we'll see pictures from the hotel, right? But why won't we look? The answer is, because it's not about them. Birchas Kohanim is about us. Birchas Kohanim is about the Kohanim inspiring within us to discover a capacity for kahuna. We're not supposed to be distracted. These aren't models of Ruchnias. These are individuals that are trying to bring the menorah to us. That's why, what do? While they're singing up there, hopefully singing, if they have decent voices, right? We are reciting tefillos about dreams. Why are you talking about dreams during Birkas Kohanim? Because dreams are unique to who we are. Dreams are unique to our individual passions, our individual desires, our individual aspirations. Dreams bring out the ultimate of what it is we're trying to accomplish. And so that's ultimately what Hanukkah is about. Hanukkah is about all of us standing around and recognizing the role of the menorah, the role of the candles, the role that we play in not just the shul and the rabbi and the kohen and the leader and the rosh yeshiva in bringing Torah to the world, but the role that each individual home and ne'er l'chol echad v'echad, each individual person in every individual home has in ultimately illuminating the world with the values and ideals of Torah. I wish all of us a Chanukah and a